Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. I think Vox called the decision taken by the U.S. Supreme Court this morning murky. It is not easy to understand, and it's nuanced. And of course, the case that is being brought before the U.S. Supreme Court regarding this Texas gestational limit law is, well, you kind of have to either be a lawyer or know a lawyer who can explain it to you to understand it, in my opinion. Joining us to explain the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling on the Texas gestational law earlier today, Roger Severino. He's senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, formerly served as director of the Office for Civil Rights at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and he's a graduate of Harvard Law School. Roger, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. Glad to be back.
Refresh our memory about what this state Senate Bill 8 requires.
SB 8, which is the heartbeat bill, would have effectively outlawed abortions after a fetal heartbeat is detected. And it allowed private parties to enforce the law. And that's what made it so unique and creative. Roe v. Wade and all the Supreme Court precedents afterwards have created what's called the abortion distortion, which made it very difficult for states to protect unborn life and to get a law actually enforced before a court would run in and cut it off at the pass. What Texas did with the heartbeat bill was create a mechanism such that the law could actually go into effect, and then people would have to sue to see how it would fare under Roe v. Wade. That's really what it was about. That was made it unique, and the Supreme Court actually let it go into effect back in September. And after this ruling, it is continuing to be into effect. And as a result, hearts are beating in Texas that would have been extinguished otherwise, and it will continue to beat in the intermediate future.
What did the court say today about the Biden administration's challenge to this Texas law?
Oh, it dismissed it outright. So there you have a distinction between what the abortion clinics were arguing versus what the Biden administration and DOJ under Merrick Garland was arguing. Garland, who wanted to be a Supreme Court justice, was shown the back of the hand by the Supreme Court. He got only one vote, Sotomayor, in support of his very radical argument that the Justice Department had the ability to go into any court to try to enforce constitutional rights without Congress authorizing it. No court has ever recognized that sort of right. He got one vote, and the court, without even giving it the dignity of a response, dismissed it out of hand with a one sentence. It's called a dig, a dismiss, for it being improvidently granted. And that's a polite way of saying, take a hike. You had no arguments worth even us having to respond to.
Now, with regard to further challenges to this law, what did the court say?
That's where it does get a bit murky. It's a decision that really only law geeks would love, taking out the different pieces. But the bottom line is very, very important. You had a majority of the Supreme Court saying that the law is fine, that the law can go into effect procedurally without being blocked before it comes out of the gate. And that's with most laws. Most laws, they're allowed to go into effect, and if it does violate a constitutional right or some other right, you get to sue to vindicate your rights in court. You don't get to go to a court and say, sorry, block the law from ever coming into effect. The majority of the court said, yes, it can go into effect. One caveat was the impact on licensing authorities. So abortionists might get some protection from losing their licenses as long as Roe v. Wade is on the books. But the abortionists may still be liable for violating the heartbeat law. If they extinguish human life after a heartbeat is detected, they could be liable for significant civil monetary penalties, and that could carry on into the future depending on whether or not Roe v. Wade is struck down. If Roe is struck down, they're going to be in some serious trouble, and that means for every day, they're going to probably back off and say they do not want to take the risk, and that means that unborn life will be protected in Texas and will continue to live today.
Justice Gorsuch called the ruling today procedural. What does that mean? And did the court say anything whatsoever about the law's constitutionality?
No, it did not address the merits of Roe versus Wade. And after the Dobbs argument, we have some very good reasons based on the questions to believe the court is finally going to put Roe v. Wade into the dustbin of history where it belongs. It is a lawless decision. It has distorted our politics. It's distorted our court system, distorted our laws. And what the court did today was saying, no more. We're not going to invent new rules just to try to distort the law to protect abortion when it's a right that was never actually in the Constitution to begin with. And what the court signaled in the Dobbs argument is that it's ready to put this all behind them, to get out of this abortion business, to stop worrying about all of these complicated, murky procedural questions that are only exist because the abortion distortion has driven abortion policy and not the democratic process and the people having a say. The people of Texas had their say. The law was allowed to be put into effect, and that is continuing today.
What kind of future challenges could that Texas law face?
Well, like every other challenge, you get your day in court after the law generally gets put into effect. So if an abortionist wants to take the risk of extinguishing fetal life after a heartbeat, then they're going to take that risk and they get to argue that Roe v. Wade is still good law. Good luck with that. After the Dobbs argument, they're going to put themselves at extraordinary risks because the law is backwards looking, retroactive. So any abortion they commit now that is against the law, they're going to be on the hook if Roe v. Wade falls, which I expect it will.
Chief Justice Roberts sided with the minority today, and he seemed to indicate that if someone wanted to challenge this, they better get to it quick. Is that an indication that he thinks Roe is going to go too?
It's hard to read the tea leaves. Now, he did side with the liberals on the Texas heartbeat law, but again, it was procedural. It was not on merits. He seemed to be offended that the state did what it could under its power to get around the crazy abortion precedents and distortion. That there are special rules for abortion. There have been ever since Roe v. Wade. And the Supreme Court has said enough is enough. We're not going to make things up anymore just because it has to do with abortion. The law should be the same for all the laws. Justice Roberts said, well, he wanted to continue making stuff up when it came to abortion. However, he did not say that abortion is here to stay. He said, given what the state of the law is right now, right? But that right now is subject to change come June with the Dobbs decision. And in that, he said some very encouraging things, saying that a 15-week ban, what is wrong with a 15-week ban? Moving away from viability standard, it's unworkable. And if you move away from viability, Roe really has to fall. So I was very encouraged what the chief said about the actual substance of Roe.
Justice Sotomayor is reported as saying that the court's refusal to block the law's enactment, which they could have done in September, she says, quote, betrays not only the citizens of Texas, but also our constitutional system of government, end quote. How do you respond?
It's typical Sotomayor overblown rhetoric. And remember, during the oral argument at Dobbs, she compared an unborn child response to pain as a dead foot responding to a reflex. And that's sort of offensive talk. You get to hear that from her on occasion. And she's the most aggressive on the left. She was the only one that supported DOJ's over-aggressive arguments to even be involved in this case at all. So I would just dismiss that as overblown rhetoric that we would expect from Sotomayor. The laws should be the same. Abortion shouldn't get a special pass. And that's what the Supreme Court said today.
Where does the court's decision then leave SB 8 in the state of Texas?
It's going to be enforced like other laws can be enforced. And if the abortion clinics are willing to take the risk, if they believe Roe is here to stay, then they're free to take that risk. But the fact that they are not, that they've shut down their operations and hearts are beating in Texas today of unborn children that would not, shows that they don't even believe what they're selling. They don't believe that this is such a fundamental right that the Supreme Court is going to come to save the day. It's going to go back to the democratic process. States like Texas and others will finally be able to get their say. And I'm very encouraged by what the Supreme Court did today because it rejected the siren call to aggregate more power to themselves in the name of abortion. They've said enough is enough. And this is the next to last domino to fall. The last domino to fall will be Roe's demise, which I am hopeful will happen come this June. And then the real fight will begin to make sure that every woman faced with a troubled crisis pregnancy have an option for adoption, state support, that deadbeat dads are made sure that they are forced to pay what they're required to support women and their kids, to make sure that we welcome all life that is innocent and support the mothers, because abortion is not the answer. And I'm so hopeful that we are so close to getting there. And once we see that change, the pro-life movement is going to take off, and we'll be welcoming children, mothers, and fathers, and nobody will be excluded from the human family or not protected by law. That is the vision.
Roger Severino is Senior Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. He formerly served as Director of the Office for Civil Rights at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and he's a graduate of Harvard Law School. You can find out more about the Ethics and Public Policy Center on the Talk on Demand Archives page at issuesetc.org. Roger, thank you very much.
Thank you.
When we return, we're going to talk about Lutheran liturgical identity. Pastor Larry Peters has recently written about how, well, in the Lutheran confessions, in both theology and practice, they were conservative. They sought to keep rather than to omit as much as they possibly could. Now, the fact is, many Lutheran congregations have not followed that principle. We'll talk about why after this.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.